The following program is presented by Hanson McLean.
It's time for Hanson McLean Advisors Money Matters, hosted by Scott Hanson and Pat McLean, credentialed financial advisors serving you since 1993.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean. Thanks for joining us.
That's right. We are here this weekend, the first weekend in August. Both myself and my co-host here, we're both financial advisors. We spend our weekdays working with people like yourself, helping them plan their finances, and we come here on the weekends to be your financial advisors on the air. We are both practicing advisors, meaning we're not...
it's not theoretical.
And we're not professional talk show hosts that...
and that will be apparent as the show goes on.
And anyways, my point behind that is that this is stuff that we do day in and day out. And we come here to answer questions and to give you second opinions and help you make some wise choices with your finances.
And then actually, I think, Scott, I can tell you, I get every bit as much out of doing the show just from the questions we ask, because you get a broad view of what the consumer is thinking.
Consumer?
Consumer.
No one wants to be called a consumer.
What would you like me to call them? Listeners.
Thanks. Well, that sounds better.
The persons. The listeners.
People, yeah.
Consumers.
How about people? Americans.
How about buying units?
Oh, for crying out loud. Anyway, but we're here today to talk about financial issues. And we don't talk about every news story. We don't talk always about what the markets are doing. We try to sort through some of the noise and bring up some things that might have some relevance to you. And, of course, we take your calls, answer your questions on things that are going on in your financial world. If you want to be part of the program, we'd love to take your call. To join us, our contact number, anything financial related, so it might have a retirement savings issue or might have to do with the recent last couple of days in the stock market, might have to do with college savings or estate planning.
Or you may have left your employer and are looking to whether you should keep it in the old 401k, new 401k, roll it to an IRA.
Whatever the case may be, our contact number to join us is 921-1530. Again, that's 921-1530. You can also send us a question. You can email us at questions@moneymatters.com. Again, questions@moneymatters.com. Or you can text us at 916-229-9999. Again, 229-9999 to be part of the show. Of course, Thursday, we had a bit of a pullback on the market, and Friday,
it wasn't really that much, but
it was less than a 3% decline overall. But you realize this is what's bizarre, less than 3% decline. This is the worst downturn we've had in over 2 years.
So
for the week.
We talked about it last week on the show, Scott, where the market hasn't had a 10% decline in over 1,000 days, the broad market, the S&P 500, which is highly unusual.
Well, and here's what's confusing. So from an investor standpoint, here's what gets confusing, right? So last night I went on to MarketWatch.com. I go to a lot of different websites, and that's not a bad one. It's not a, you know. Anyway, right on the front page, I read a couple different things. These three market signals point to a 20% stock tumble.
Really?
Oh. Then I have another one. Trader who called three crashes sees 20% collapse. Then I see headline, ignore the bears and you could bank a 22% stock market gain. And then another one, why you shouldn't count on a significant market correction.
so 2-4, 2-against.
Yeah, it's just so, I mean, I just considering they're all on like the front page, I thought from an individual investor standpoint, there are tons of opinions out there. You could either try to find the right opinion and hope you're right, or you can have a more broadly based portfolio. If this last week on Thursday's market pullback caused some anxiety in you,
well, then you've got too much. You've got too much invested in stocks,
or you don't have a proper allocation, don't have a proper strategy, and there's no reason you should worry about it.
But Scott,
zero.
Listen, would you agree that there are times where it is better? So that I know you'll agree with this. There's times where you want to put more risk in your portfolio in terms of more equity exposure or alternative exposure, and there are times that you want less, but you should never be either 100% or zero.
I would agree.
Right? So our view of
Well, here's our view, I think, is we can't predict the markets like anybody. But there are times when it's like, this looks like a better bet than other times.
That is correct.
You might increase or decrease.
Because we're investment advisors, we don't use the word bet. We're going to use the higher statistical probability of a positive outcome.
There we go.
Because the clients don't want to hear the word bet.
Okay, fair enough. We're going to make a bet.
Yeah, higher statistical probability of a favorable outcome. That is...
with a high degree of
certainty
and focus on the downside protection.
Correct. So right now, and we said it a couple weeks ago, and we said it last week, is that the equity markets are not nearly as favorable as they were 3 years ago. Right? They have had a significant run-up.
Of course.
And the earnings are hard to come by.
3, 4, 5 years ago.
And we're probably in a bit of a bubble when you looked at companies like Facebook or LinkedIn or Amazon or
Twitter this
Netflix
last week was up, what, 30% or something ridiculous.
Twitter, we're probably in a bubble there. And one of the indications it gave us is LinkedIn stock was up significantly this week because they beat their revenue projection. Not their profit projections, their revenue projections. This just reeks of 1999. So in watching this marketplace and you see this pullback this week, which was a minor pullback.
And it could be the markets could roar ahead the next several weeks, quarters, years.
So what should the
I think the most
listeners should take from this is to know what they own.
Absolutely. And know how your portfolio would react to a major downturn like we had in 07, 08, 09, during that crisis, right? Make sure you have an understanding of what your portfolio, how it would react during those times, and make sure you have the right kind of strategy. Look, if you're 54 years old and you plan on working another 12 plus years, actually a downturn like this should be welcomed. It gives you an opportunity to buy more stocks at lower prices.
Assuming that you are rational and not emotionally led.
Yes.
I guess that's what you're trying to make the point.
Of course. If you're still investing, you would prefer lower stock prices. That gives you a chance to buy more. Now, if you're 67 and retired, hopefully your portfolio is in such a manner that your income is not just coming out of stocks every month.
That is correct.
And if it's designed properly, you should be able to go years and years of having some income before you have to look at selling any stocks. So even in that situation, you should be able to have your equity portfolio have a long-term view on things. So... if you're sitting there looking at these different articles about maybe it is about we're about to have a collapse, good luck to you.
Yeah.
Actually,
the best thing to do is to actually build a model of your portfolio and understand what you own.
Perfect. If that was you, you probably sold out years ago.
Maybe.
Did you see the story about Dollar? I didn't realize there's that many different 99-cent stores. They now are
Dollar Tree
stores.
Dollar Tree.
No, I think, yes, okay. Family Dollar, which I guess another one of the dollar stores, was acquired by Dollar Tree.
Correct.
For $8.5 billion.
That's a lot of money.
That is a lot of stuff selling for a buck.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I don't know if they're all a dollar.
But,
anymore.
You know, manufacturers actually build specific products for this sector.
Well, you know, what's interesting about this, this sector, the big boy in that area is Dollar, or why did I say boy? The major company is Dollar General Corp.
Yeah. Not to be confused with Dollar Tree.
Or Family Dollar.
Yes.
What happened to the 99-cent store? I think they sold out.
They sold to someone.
To a dollar. That's one way to increase your revenue. Move from 99 cents to a dollar.
Oh, it would be significant.
In any case, part of this is if you look at there are many Americans whose financial circumstances are much tougher today than they were a decade ago. They have not had the recovery from the financial crisis. They're still struggling. And so they've been big shoppers of these stores.
As well and as grocery outlets.
It's hurting things like Walmart. And
correct.
Target.
Correct.
I mean, Target's kind of a high-end five and dime store compared to a Dollar Tree or Family Dollar or Dollar General.
Yeah.
All the different dollars. But
It's a massive marketplace.
Yeah, I tend not to shop there too often.
When was the last time you went there, Scott? You went there when your kids were like six, and you went there to let them pick out Christmas gifts for each other.
I went there, and I went there a year ago because I was heading over to a trip to Africa, and I was bringing a bunch of supplies, crafts, and I thought.
Oh, that was nice. That was
but
a good
wasn't
idea.
But they weren't all good bargains, though, I also realized. You got to be a wise shopper at the dollar store. Because some of them I'm thinking.
Well, thank you for that consumer tip, Scott.
That's just one thing I noticed.
Consumer tips with Scott Hansen shopping at the Dollar General Tree store.
And I don't know. I thought it was the 99. I don't know which one it was. There's one in Folsom that's been
there
forever.
I go to the 96 cent store.
You save a lot of money. What happened to the it's funny when it used to be they used to be called five and dime stores, now they're the dollar stores.
Yeah, TGY's and Woolworths.
Yeah.
TGY and Woolworths.
Anyway.
Back in the day.
All right, we're gonna take
if you listen into the next quarter, we'll reminisce about our childhood.
We're gonna take some calls here when we come back. If you want to be part of the program, we will take your calls, so stick on once you call us. 921-1530 is our contact number. Again, 921-1530. You can send us a question on an email, questions@moneymatters.com, or you can text us at 916-229-9999. This is Hanson McLean's Money Matters. All right, welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Scott Hanson.
Pat McLean.
Yeah, glad you are here this weekend. August, it's still hot.
A little warm.
Did you also notice this last week, was this much in the news? Argentina defaulted on some of their debt again?
Yeah.
It's an interesting story. They tried cutting a deal. They did cut a deal with a bunch of the bondholders, Argentina. We'll take some calls here in a second, so we'll stick with me on this. But they cut a deal on having these bondholders accept 33 cents on the dollar. But there were some that said, we're not going to accept this deal. And these hedge funds bought these bonds, which is an obligation of Argentina, right? It's an IOU.
Yeah.
And so now it's going through courts. And in this last week, Argentina just decided not to pay them.
Well, I get that.
What do you mean you get it?
Well, Argentina looks at these guys and said, why should they profit off of our bad news?
Well,
maybe
happens.
They don't view it as a security that trades in the secondary market.
Apparently not. We didn't loan the money to you. Why should we have to pay you back?
Correct. No one said you could buy the loan.
Well, at least...
I get it from Argentina. It's not I'm not advocating it. I'm not condoning it. I'm just saying that I can see it from there. The problem is in, 4 or 5 years, they're going to want to borrow some money again.
That's right.
But Argentina probably knows. They look at the mortgage crisis in America and say, don't worry about it. They'll end up lending money to anyone pretty soon.
I don't know. It's one of those kind of stories. I find it fascinating and read a lot about it.
All right, let's
it.
Go anyway, to the phones.
Let's talk to Eileen. Eileen, you're with Hanson McLean Advisors.
Yes, thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, thanks for calling.
I have about $60,000 set aside to help my son pay off his mortgage in 15 years. And so I was going to give him $5,000 a year at the end of the year each year to do that. And then I was wondering, I wonder if I should just wait and at the end of 15 years just give him the money that's in that pot.
Why do you have $60,000 that you want your son to have?
Well, because
why $60,000? Why not $100,000 or $10,000? I'm just trying to figure out what's the.
Okay, well, it's just part of my estate plan. I'm giving my house to my daughter, and so she'll have a home, and when I die, and he'll have his house paid off.
He has
a house, she doesn't, and so I wanted that. To be equal. They both have a home.
Eileen, what is your approximate net worth?
I have a good pension. I have about $100,000 a year that I can count on.
Got it.
Yeah, good for you. That's a nice
position. And then I've got money in my 401k or whatever they call it.
And how old's your son?
That's going to go to them. My son is 41, 42, something like that.
Is he responsible financially?
Yeah, he's getting there. He's getting there, yeah.
And so your thought is,
he's responsible, yeah.
So what about just keeping the $60,000 aside for him and maybe, I mean, how old are you today?
I'm 68. Okay.
So, you know, so I get where you're coming from is that you want your daughter to inherit your home and you want
right.
to kind of par it up by giving your son this money now. And I assume you have a trust in place, a living trust in place?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
What's your son owe on his home?
Well, he's just had the home for, I think, 2 years. And so I think he bought it for $210,000.
So here's actually, it's hard for us to answer this question because we don't know your son or the family dynamic.
Well, that's good.
But I know we have lots of clients where we've addressed similar. What our recommendation would be is to not worry about what happens to the home now and what happens to.
I'd say, what if you had the $60,000 invested in something where we had some guarantees in place and had him be the beneficiary on that chunk?
Why would you even bother that, Scott? Why not just let everything go on? And maybe your daughter doesn't want to live in that house when you die. Maybe something happens between now and then. And just let them actually decide at the end. Because either one of them can purchase that house out of the estate or take it as part of their inheritance. So I would completely stay away from all of it, including worrying about whether my daughter got the house or not.
That's you, but Eileen wants the daughter to have the house and wants to make sure her son
is. Yeah.
Does the daughter want the house?
I believe so. Yeah. She doesn't have any money. She has no pension, and she doesn't have a job. So she needs a house.
So I would change the trust that says the daughter has the house, and it's included in the estate, and.
Right.
The estate is split 50-50 with the daughter getting a portion of her 50% in the house. And not worry about the
$60,000. I want to give the house to my daughter, and I want my son to have his house free and clear.
While you're alive.
Yeah, while I'm alive. Yeah. I have another 15 years to live, with, supposedly.
Statistically,
sure,
probably more than that, yeah.
Yeah, so I want to make sure that he has his house free and clear.
I see nothing wrong with your strategy of giving him the $5,000 at the end of each year to plunk down against that mortgage. That will obviously help accelerate the mortgage. It's not wouldn't be my first recommendation, but that's okay. I mean, here's the thing. These are your dollars. You get to decide how you're going to allocate them, correct? And there's not necessarily a right way or wrong way. It's what Eileen wants to do.
That is correct.
So you can read lots of different things. You can talk to advisors like us, and we can give you some sort of advice.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, these are your dollars, and you get to decide. So I see nothing wrong with your strategy.
Let's talk about a couple downsides to it. One is that your son gets married and puts the house in the name of the spouse. You now have effectively given some of that money to your child's spouse. Downside one. Second is the child becomes irresponsible in spending the money, and I saw this happen. I saw a client of mine pay down $30,000 of credit card debt, and the son showed up 2 weeks later in a red, brand new dually pickup truck. Those are the downsides. But there's nothing wrong with giving them the $5,000 a year, and I think your plan is fine.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, Eileen. Wish you well.
Can I ask you one more question?
Yep.
Sure. It's an easy one. I have $200,000 in my 401k retirement, and it's 70-30, 70 in stocks and 30 in short-term investment fund. And so, you know, the advisors always keep saying they change. You know, before, when I retired, that's the way I had it, 70-30, and then immediately the stock market crashed. And then I got scolded because I had too much money.
Nah, you didn't.
Scolded by whom?
And now I still have, now, so I sold stuff and everything and got more bonds, and Now, and then I bought it back, and so now I am back at 7:30, and
Eileen?
I'm hearing saying that, you know, that's wrong.
No, it's actually, you know what, if you were taking income and were relying on this for income,
it would be different.
But you just told us that this, you have no intention of spending any of this 401k money.
No,
you plan on being around at least 15 years.
And you said how old are your children?
They're both around 40.
Okay, so basically you're investing for a 40-year-old.
Right.
Right?
Yes.
That is your time frame.
Right.
Your time frame is 30-plus years.
Yeah.
It's funny, you didn't seem to act emotionally when the market fell. The advisors did.
Is that
fair?
Well, I don't know. I guess
that's all history. But what you don't want to do is repeat that.
Yeah. So
I
you
know
don't
want
to. So if you were in our office, we'd say 70-30 is fine for you,
given your situation.
Yeah. The average person your age that was taking income, this would be way too aggressive. But as long as you can hold the course, if you go out 30 years, the statistical probabilities that a 70-30 will do better than a 40-60 or 50-50 is real.
Yeah.
And I think it's appropriate for that investment. And I don't listen to the investment advisors that look at your age and tell you how it should be allocated.
Okay, so you think 70-30, even though I don't need the money and it's going to go to them.
That's why
we're comfortable appropriate. 70-30.
That's why it's appropriate.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
All right, Eileen.
Okay,
appreciate
then I'll leave it.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you so much. Bye.
All right, we wish you well.
She's got it going on. Scott, she knows what she's doing.
I was going to throw one other idea. 68-year-old who has money that you want to leave to your kids, you're planning on being around another 15 years. Now, we rail against annuities because we're not big fans of annuities, but there are some variable annuities that have some quite attractive death benefit features on there where you can get maybe a 5% compound growth guaranteed as far as a death benefit. You're looking at me kind of cross-eyed.
Well, because... Yes. If she was more skittish,
There are actually times that those kind of things can make sense. These are dollars you want to leave for your kids. You want to make sure it's there for them, but you don't want to stick it in the mattress and earn nothing, and you don't want
absolutely.
To take the risk of the stock market. It's a way you can kind of have the best of both worlds.
Because what you're doing is you're looking to see what the dollar is at the end of the day, not what it does on a day-to-day basis.
You're concerned about what it's going to be. Yeah.
Yeah. So. And obviously, it's you want to look at the cost associated with those because they can be quite expensive.
Absolutely. It's cheaper to avoid them, for sure. Insurance is always expensive. Let's talk to Dan. Dan, you're with Hanson McLean Advisors.
Hello, Pat. Hello, Scott. How are you guys doing?
Good. Thank you.
You're welcome. Just to kind of clear in some discrepancy, what it was, because I made the same mistake that...
Can you back up? I have no idea what you're talking about.
Okay, well, with the... when you were talking about, the dollar stores.
Oh, got it.
General. Yeah, that's the one that's very misleading. It puts on the appearance that everything's a dollar in there, but when you go in there, it's anything but a dollar. So it's not Dollar Tree or 99 cents.
Okay,
but anyway.
Got it.
Okay. But,
You mean the people doing the marketing might not be the same people setting the prices?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, it's just kind of... I wouldn't put Dollar General on my store if I didn't sell everything for a dollar. I'd feel like a crook. But anyway, but I was wondering, do you know if what it was that saved the American economy from completely collapsing in 2009?
Oh, what was it?
What was it that saved the American economy?
Oh, that's a great question. So in my opinion, it was the Federal Reserve and the U.S. government coming in and, first of all, stabilizing the money market funds, which was the most important thing.
When you look at when the stock market turned March, I forget the date, in 2009, that was the date the Federal Reserve came in. Because what was happening, and I appreciate you asking this question, what was happening at that period of time is we had the financial markets basically just came to a standstill.
They were locked up.
And we were about to be at a point where companies were no longer had a place to borrow on a short-term basis, the money markets. And the Federal Reserve stepped in and said, we're going to basically back these, guarantee these for a period of time, and it kept the grease going. If that did not happen...
We were weeks away from not having food on shelves in grocery stores.
Whoa.
Truly, because that food that sits on a grocery store, that's bought on credit.
Short-term credit.
It's on short-term credit, right?
Yeah. And then like you might use a credit card and pay it off. I use a credit card for everything, pay it off at the end of the month.
The trucks that buy the fuel, credit.
Oh.
It was that thing when they stepped in, the Federal Reserve said, we're going to guarantee the money markets. At that point in time, we at Hanson McLean had a big sigh of relief and said, it's going to be okay. It is going to be okay.
Sort of. But anyway, I appreciate the call. And truly, it was a kind of an interesting time. There's many different factors, but anyway, that's kind of one opinion there. 921-1530 to be part of Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Stick around. We'll take some more calls and take your questions. This is Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
Pat McLean.
Glad you are here with us on this first weekend in August, on this hot week. You know, I had a we'll take the calls here in a minute. 921-1530, by the way, if you want to join us, our contact number to be part of the program.
Slow down. 921-1530.
I remember I had it years ago. Some lady, this big, long letter to the station, a complaint about I spoke too fast or something. You know, I'm sorry about that.
Or, and it was a long letter, so she not only wanted you to speak slower, she was verbose.
Okay. And then you can also send us a question at questions@moneymatters.com. That's our email, questions@moneymatters.com. Or send us a text, 916-229-9999. And we'd love to help you out.
We're going
to
add a you can tweet us pretty soon, too.
I think you can now, but we're not. Yeah. But they're delimited on the characters.
Maybe that lady that complained about you talking.
She should have tweeted.
She should have tweeted.
Would have been much better. I took the day off yesterday with my family, and we a big
must
family.
Must be nice.
It was nice. We went up to Tahoe and did a family hike. And I got to tell you, and I don't know why I mentioned, but my, you know, as your kids go through the different stages as they get older, the kids are 18 and 16. It was like probably the nicest family hike I think had ever happened. There was no complaining.
You didn't have to carry anyone on your back.
None of that.
Where'd you hike?
Up Mount Tulak.
Very nice.
Right, kind of by
was it hot? Distance. Was it warm?
No, it was perfect. Just absolutely beautiful. I think it was smoking in the valley. That's why we were up there yesterday and enjoyed
very
it.
Nice.
I don't know why I'm mentioning that. I encourage you to go up to the Tahoe region.
I'm doing something very similar, like kind of family outing today with my family.
Watching Cops reruns?
I'm actually going to the movies by myself.
Are you?
Yeah.
I like going to the movies by myself.
I'm going to see
I do it about once a year.
Philip Seymour Hoffman's last movie, A Most Wanted Man.
Oh.
I'm looking forward to it.
I never don't know anything about it.
I like
I don't
Philip
go to
Seymour
the movies
Hoffman.
Very often. Oh, well.
I'm a
All
huge
right.
fan.
We're going to take some calls. 921-1530. We're talking with Bob. Bob, you're with Hanson McLean Advisors.
Hi. Thank you guys for taking my call. You know, my insurance company, I have really good insurance. I've had them forever. Advised me again on umbrella policy for my rentals and my residential home.
Uh-huh.
And I was wondering, what do you think about that? It's $1 million policy, and it's only $300 a year. It seems like a steal.
I'm a big fan of umbrella policies.
My question is that enough?
I think so, because if somebody gets something happens in one house, it shouldn't be more than $1 million, I wouldn't think.
Well,
plus whatever insurance I have.
Yeah, well, actually, so that what that does is it insures around the other stuff. So if you have a $200,000 policy, what the umbrella does is bring it to $1 million. So the question I would ask is you'll find that if maybe with a it depends on your net worth and how risky these homes are in terms of, you know, do they have families living in them? Are they young kids?
It's not, I don't even know if it's much as that. Typically, you want to have as much umbrella as about what your net worth is.
Correct. No, but you would actually, if
here's the real danger is you or a family member cause an accident that takes the life of a high income person. That's where you're going to have
That's where the danger. Or
that's the biggest thing.
Or
issue.
You have children and some other child comes to play and there's a terrible accident. So what you'll find that is a $2 million umbrella liability is not twice as expensive as a $1 million. It's probably about $450 a year or $500 versus $300. So you absolutely should have an umbrella liability policy. No question. And then you should ask them to quote it $2 million and $3 million. And you want to insure as much as your net worth. And we talk about it twice a year.
Yeah.
And it is probably the largest financial gap. That and term life insurance is probably the largest financial basic gap that we see in America today.
the things that really cause a havoc.
Yeah,
like havoc.
The catastrophic things.
And the challenge is, if you don't have any assets, then you don't need an umbrella policy because there's nothing to lose. But the more you have, what ends up happening if there's some sort of accident or somewhere there might be a case against you? Attorneys will do an asset search. They'll say, let's see, does this Bob guy have any money before we decide to sue him?
And that's one of the first things they do is an asset
they
search.
They see you've got a bunch of rental properties and stuff. They say, oh, this guy's a fat cat, one percenter. Let's go after him.
Yeah, I don't have much money at all. I'm just really hanging on to what I have.
Well, if you got assets, they'll see the assets.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
If you got some rentals, I'd have the umbrella policy.
Oh, at least a million.
Yeah.
Okay.
At least a million.
All right.
I will do that Monday then. Thank you.
Yeah,
so much.
Good luck, Bob. Yeah, and you typically, it's typically offered from the same people that do your homeowners insurance. And I've had an umbrella policy for as long as I can recall. Matter of fact, I just did some review of all my insurance stuff, and that's always fun.
It sounds like a great time. Sounds like a great time.
Can we talk more about the? I noticed here in the declarations page, I give you those big fat. Who can read all that stuff? Big fat things.
Well, I'm hoping you could.
I could, but part of it, I have the same real estate agent. I mean, and property casualty agent I've had for 10 or 15 years, and I trust that she understands my situation, gives me recommendations, I follow her advice, and so I do not read the big things. Just like I assume most investors don't read the prospectuses in their entirety,
although they should.
Yeah. Although we must recommend that they do
for compliance reasons.
Oh. It's a good read, too. I mean, if you're having trouble sleeping, insomnia, the prospectuses are always good. 921-1530. Let's talk to Clay. Clay, you're with Hanson McLean Advisors.
You guys, thank you very much for your show as over the weekends for many, many years.
Oh, well, thank you.
Thank you for your time. And cross your fingers on this one. On my rentals, I went to $3 million. And the agent said, and imagine the defense you're going to get when they have that much money on the line.
Ah, that's a good point. The insurance company would pay for the defense with $3 million online. Good point.
And the question I have, though, what is the tax schedule on a 457 conversion upon retirement to a Roth?
That all depends on what your other income is. So what happens when you do a conversion, whether it's a 457 or a 401k or regular IRA to a Roth IRA, whatever amount you convert is added on to your other income you've got for the year. So if you don't have much income and you convert, say, $10,000, your tax liability is going to be very small. But let's say you're in a position where you've got a taxable income of $50,000 or $100,000, and then you add on another large chunk, you can be pushing yourself to at top tax rates, where half of it's going to be hit with taxes.
And that so it is, depending on the amount you convert, it just scales right up.
That is correct. It just comes to you as regular, ordinary income, and it can push you into a higher bracket. So from what you asked right now, so Claire, I'm going to assume that you worked for state or county and that you're going to retire and receive a monthly pension. At that point in time, you would look at converting your 457 to a Roth. Fair?
Correct.
All right. My guess is that you probably work in the safety sector somewhere and you plan on returning to work, correct?
Well, returning to work as in an irritant
or somewhere, right? So what we see is oftentimes people that retire in their early to mid-50s actually don't leave the workforce and they start their monthly pension. They do something different, sometimes in the same field, sometimes that. Rarely have I seen it make sense to convert the 457 to a Roth. I can't even remember a single time where it made sense for that.
Wow, just because I just want to be self-directed in my own program.
Oh, God. Well, then that's a different question altogether. You don't have to convert to a Roth. You can just convert to a regular IRA. So
perfect.
Now, but here's the bad thing about converting to the regular IRA. How old are you, Clay?
50.
And when do you plan on retiring?
You know, like you say, in a couple of years, maybe sooner, maybe later.
Okay, so here's the difference between a 457 and an IRA. A 457 becomes completely liquid when you sever employment, which means you can actually take those dollars anywhere you want.
Take the income without
any penalty. If you move them to an IRA and then you withdraw them for your own use, then there's a 10% federal penalty and 2.5% state. So you do have an alternative, which is if you work for the state of California, do you?
No, I do not.
Okay. So you do have an alternative, which is a 457 plan. Many of them you could actually move into a self-directed option and actually, while you're employed, and have complete discretion over the dollars.
Yep.
So if you actually call my office, on, and I rarely do this, call my office. Don't even call my office. Call your plan administrator or human resources.
That's a takeaway.
Well, no, just ask them if they have a self-directed brokerage option on your plan, which is called a self-directed option or self-directed brokerage account.
If they do, which I think they do, your options are unlimited.
And you don't have to wait till retire.
Yeah, we're up against the clock here. If not, you can roll those into an IRA at retirement, and they're locked till 59.5, but it does give you some more options. But I bet you have a self-directed option.
And I bet you could do it tomorrow. You don't have to wait till retire.
We
got to
take a break. 921-1530. This is Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Hanson McLean's Money Matters, back with you. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean. Thanks for joining. What? I was enjoying the show so much, I just thought I'd sit back and watch you do it.
You were giving me these hand signals.
Oh, I want to take call line on line one.
Oh, got it. You're giving me these hand signals,
I'm throwing some signs.
That's what I thought. I remember I saw the movie Colors not long ago.
Oh, yeah, Colors. Is that the closest you got to the gang? Colors.
There's my age for you.
Huh?
When was that? In the
80s?
Well,
right after we went to the Backstreet Boys concert.
Flash the sign. That's what it looked like you're doing, the way you had it like...
The biggest gang reference you could get is 1988 with Colors. Thank you for that, Sean.
I guess it, okay. You know, what can I say? 25 years ago. It wasn't even a good movie then either. I don't know what I was, but that's what you, I just was had the flashback.
I want to take line
or
one.
You look like a hip hop video. I don't watch the music videos either.
Okay, let's.
All right,
let's go through the calls. Oh, take line two.
We're gonna. How about this? Well, at 921-1530, we're gonna talk to Rick. Rick, you're with Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Hey, thanks so much for taking my call.
Hi, Rick.
I've had some kind of catastrophic financial losses in the last 3 or 4 years, and I'm down to basically nothing except I own a couple of properties.
Okay. Well, that doesn't sound like nothing.
Well, all the cash, all the stock, the retirement account, it all got eaten up, and I won't go into the long, sad story about that. But
and is there any equity in these properties, or are they mortgaged up?
The properties are paid for.
Okay.
So my question is, at 65, where do you go from here? Do you just reverse mortgage this stuff, or do you, or what?
Well.
What do you do to start building it?
Do you have do you have any income right now? Are you working or?
I do some consulting and I have some income. I don't plan to retire. I'm incredibly healthy. Everybody thinks I'm going to live to be 100 like my folks and my great grandfather and grandfather.
So you have not started collecting Social Security yet? I take it.
No, I haven't taken any.
Well, first of all, I would wait till age 70 on that.
Okay.
Do not get tempted. And the reason is, look, if you didn't have this financial crisis that you went through and had a bunch of other assets, it might make sense to take Social Security as soon as you can at your normal retirement age because let's take it while we can get it. But your odds are that Social Security is going to be a pretty good piece of your retirement. It's going to be a necessary income. So if you can wait till age 70, it's going to be much larger than if you take it today.
So tell us about the properties you own, your primary residence. What's the value of it?
Primary residence is worth about $425,000.
And you owe nothing on it, correct?
That's completely paid for.
Okay, and let's talk about rental one. What's that worth?
That's worth about if we put $40,000 in it to clean it up and paint it and redo the kitchen, it'd probably be worth $350,000.
Okay, so it's worth $310,000 today, and do you have another property after that?
That's basically it.
Okay.
And the rental, is that providing income right now?
Just barely.
When you say just barely, what's that mean?
we've had to do a lot of maintenance. If
I can tell you that it's bringing me $1,200 a month.
Okay.
If I didn't look at the money that I've put into it in the last 2 years.
So the yield on it is $1,200 a month after expenses. The yield on it right now
not
is probably
good.
About 2.5%.
Yeah.
And how much will you earn this year?
Probably about 75 to maybe 90 if I'm lucky.
All right. So, Rick, so let's just start that. You're doing okay. And I'm sorry that what you went through happened to you, but you're okay. I mean, you've got a net worth of about $750,000 with decent income. And if you push Social Security until you're 70, are you married?
Yes.
Okay. For the both of you, you'll probably be fine. I think I would look at getting rid of this rental. And you could do a reverse mortgage on your primary residence, but I wouldn't do one yet.
Not now.
No, I wouldn't do one yet. The only benefit of doing it now would be as if you took the credit line and because of low interest rates, but I wouldn't do it. I'd push that off. And there's a good chance you'll never have to take a reverse mortgage.
Yeah, I think I'd really like not to do that. You know?
So we obviously don't know what you went through, but odds are, if just talking to you, it sounds like you probably had higher income in the past and had a much higher net worth than you have today, right? Is that correct?
Okay. Yeah, it was.
And now you're
higher.
65 and you're not 35 anymore, and you're thinking, wow, I'm 65 years old. How in the heck do I rebuild? But if you say you don't have any desire to retire right away and you've got a lot of longevity in your family, I wouldn't be so concerned about it as you are.
Okay.
I mean, really, I know it's frustrating, right? And you're not where you wanted to be. But you could be 65 and 3 years away from death and have all kinds of assets. There's lots of people like that.
Yeah.
So this rental property is not doing anything for you.
That's kind of awesome.
I think it's a distraction.
Two at a lower price or something.
Yeah, or even at this thing, I might even sell it and put it in something extremely safe and give up any upside on it just to get the downside risk on it.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm worried about. If the part of the city that it's in and that kind of stuff. If something catastrophic were to happen to it, then
you're getting twice the yield on this thing that you would get in a bank CD.
Yeah.
I would have a tendency. You would not buy this rental property today for that yield.
No, especially if it's old. Not a million years. Yeah.
Especially if it's older property. I would get rid of this, and then I'd probably take half of the proceeds and invest them in a moderate portfolio, and the other half I'd actually put in the bank.
Yeah.
And then I would actually manage your cash flow as appropriately as possible in order to get a little bit more money into savings.
You're a consultant. You have no employees. Do you have a self-employment income this year?
Yeah, I have self-employment income every half for 40 years. So.
All right. Okay. So, here's what I'm going to go a step further. I would look at, seriously consider, if you sold that rental, I would set up what's called a solo K.
Yeah.
It's an individual 401K. I'd use a Roth portion. You could funnel a huge chunk of income into that as a way to start beefing up Roth.
Do you plan on retiring in the state of California?
We'd really like to live, down in South Orange County, but
okay.
We'll probably retire to Washington State instead because of the taxes.
And you have friends or family in Washington State?
I'd rather live on Laguna Niguel on the ocean for retirement.
I like the idea of funding a solo K, but I don't know if I would do it a Roth if there was even the slightest possibility of moving out of the state of California.
Oh, okay.
Scott, his income isn't that high.
Yeah, I think
the more the deduction will be greater for you now than I think that your income when you retire will be.
I don't know. Well, it's certainly.
And if we couldn't come to an agreement, I'd put half into a Roth and half into a deductible.
Yeah, I definitely look at the solo K as a way of funneling.
Oh, there's no question.
Yeah, if you plan on being a consultant going forward, if it's something you're not going to be doing, then
the short answer is go ahead, sell the rental. And look at funding a solo K, either a deductible or non-deductible, which would be the Roth, and trying to fund that out of current income every year and work until you're 70. And actually, it wouldn't be hard to run some projections as to what your income would look like at age 70 to make you a little bit more comfortable. So
it could be a lot worse, Rick. I know you may not be where you were before. I bet there's other listeners who are thinking, I wouldn't mind being at Rick's position at age 65. house paid off and a rental paid for. So
yeah, well, it's.
I know.
I learned a long time ago to try to live on about 10% less than I earned.
Yeah,
that's kind of the key, isn't it?
It certainly is.
So yeah. We appreciate the call. Sorry you went through that.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for the advice. I really like this. I like this idea. I hadn't even considered it.
Not good. Well, yeah, wish you well, Rick. And
thank you.
You know, sometimes things happen in life that change plans, too.
Oh, yeah.
And the interesting thing about financial planning is an ongoing process, right? So I mean, one of the things that I enjoy, the reason I've been doing this for 20-some-odd years, one of the things I enjoy how things just change. And
yeah, the rules change. The markets change. People change.
There's just a lot of things to deal with. And so financial planning, we can all have these goals and we have these certain plans and work towards them, but we need to be prepared when something derails those plans.
Yeah.
Whether it's the financial markets, whether it's a creditor, whether it's a lawsuit, whether it's a health issue of a loved one, or your own health issue or whatever, things can just happen at times. So, 921-1530, let's talk to John. John, you're with Hanson McLean Advisors.
Yeah, I was left in retirement and I got like cash, and with the cash they sent me and on the same package they sent me, there was like hello?
Yeah, we're totally lost on what you're talking about. So can you start from this?
I got a retirement left for me from a partner that passed away.
Okay, so you inherited a 401k or 457, correct?
Yeah, and it was through like MetLife or something.
Okay, it was an annuity, okay.
So he left me $70,000 in cash, and there was like five companies, like it said, NCR, AT&T, Lucent, and one other company. I can't remember what it was.
Got it. Okay, so you inherited a brokerage account that happened to be housed at, it sounds like, MetLife.
It could have been an IRA.
It could have been either, yes, that's correct.
Was it an IRA?
Like, I don't know like how to go about changing it from his name to my name.
Okay, here's what I'd recommend.
That could help me to do that or see what I have.
Yeah, you need to actually sit down with a financial advisor.
Yeah, I would recommend go talk to a couple different financial advisors. Find someone you're comfortable with who can help you through this process. It doesn't need to be that complex, but if it's something like an IRA, it needs to go to an IRA. If it's a brokerage account, it can just come directly to you.
My partner used to work for the phone company for AT&T, so it seems like that he had some financial portfolio, because in the end, he wasn't really keeping track of it.
Yeah, so your best bet, John, it sounds like you're kind of in the dark on even knowing which kind of plan it is. So really your best bet would be go talk to a financial advisor. We really need to figure out first if this is a retirement account, it needs to go to an IRA. If it was some sort of a brokerage account, it can come directly to you. But we need to get those things figured out first. I'd highly recommend you go talk to a financial advisor. The music means that we are out of time, unfortunately. We are here every Saturday from 10 to 11, rebroadcast Sundays from 2 to 3. You can learn more about us and go to HansonMcLean.com. All kinds of good information there. And enjoy the rest of your weekend. We'll see you next week.